Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. As you know, our goal is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can stay invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we are very fortunate to have Amber Lewis, founder and CEO of The Good Kitchen, join us. I've known about The Good Kitchen for a number of years now and couldn't be more excited to have a chance to sit down with Amber and learn more. A visit to the website will tell you it's fresh, delicious, fully prepared meals delivered right to your door. The meals are paleo, organic, and non-GMO, and ready in 3 minutes. A quick little background, Amber was with Bank of America prior to starting The Good Kitchen, and even prior to that, she spent some time with different technology companies. Amber, thank you for taking the time to join the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I want to start off a little bit. We usually get a sense from people as to whether or not they've been an entrepreneur since they were in diapers or if it's just something that just, you know, kind of fell into them. So if you could, do you know when it became apparent or known to you that you were an entrepreneur at heart?
You know, I think I wasn't the little kid that had the lemonade stand, but I was definitely a dreamer. And I've always been a visionary type and always trying to figure out how to do things better. And I always had this like nagging sense that I needed to go out on my own and I really wanted to work for myself. And I wasn't, you know, really sure what that was going to be or, you know, where that passion was going to come from. But I just kind of always had this, I guess, this dream that one day I would be my own boss. And so it probably is right before I started. The first name of the company was Mod Paleo. It was probably when I first started that and saw the niche and got the idea and was like, oh my gosh, this could be it. this is when I'm going to be my own boss. So really it was right before I started the company.
So let's go back then. That's, if I understand correctly, is October 2011.
Mm-hmm.
What was the trigger for you to leave Bank of America and start what was then a different name? It was under the name of Mod Paleo,
mm-hmm.
and has now become The Good Kitchen. Was there an aha moment, or was it a slow build-up? How did it come through?
You know, it's funny. It was definitely that aha moment. I was working actually as a contractor for Bank of America and had been doing that for about a year and really liked what I was doing. It was lucrative. We loved being back in Charlotte, and my husband and I were coaching a boot camp, and then I would also coach CrossFit in, you know, the mornings and evenings after work. And we would run the paleo challenges. And so one of the biggest pieces of feedback that we would get is people would go on these challenges for 30 days and they would knock it out of the park. I mean, they would just see so many huge changes in their life. And they were super excited. They were seeing gains in the gym. They were losing weight. They had health issues that just disappeared. And, you know, it was really from changing the way that they were eating. And, then after 30 days, they would kind of like eke back into, you know, grabbing the quick, convenient type foods. And they just were eating out all the time and they didn't have the resources or the time to go and source, you know, from the farmers markets and go to a couple of different markets because at the time in Charlotte, you had a pretty limited availability. You had one farmers market and I know that they had some farmers markets outside of Charlotte, but the regional farmers market you could go to and then Atherton. So grass-fed beef wasn't like super readily available. They didn't have it at Trader Joe's at the time.
Yeah.
We didn't have a Publix. Whole Foods wasn't built yet. You could go down to Earth Fair, but they ran out of it a lot.
Yeah.
And so it was like, you know, where are we going to get this grass-fed beef? And it was really hard to do for 30 days, and I just couldn't make it last. And so sure enough, they would kind of get back into that slippery slope of eating how they were prior to the challenge. And, you know, a lot of the work that they had done during that 30 days had gone by the wayside. And I remember about our third paleo challenge in, Carter and I were at home, you know, looking through some of the logs and stuff. And I was like, you know what? we need to find a prepared meal company, somebody that'll prepare it for you that's healthy. And there were a couple of other, like, I think at the time, some prepared, you know, personal chef type things.
Yeah.
But nobody was focusing on this, you know, good food that was also healthy for you. And so I actually remember standing in the gym one day and thinking, I could do this. I could make food for people. I need to get a longer shelf life. And I mean, I just started immediately going through my head, like, all these things that I was going to need and how I was going to talk Carter into buying into it with me. So,
and so for clarity real quick, Carter is your husband, right?
Yes, Carter is my husband. Yeah. Yes. So I had to get my sales pitch together.
So your first investor.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny because I never thought about this, but yeah, my first amount of money that I used anything for was a tabletop food packager, and mm-hmm. it's like what they use for deer meat processing. And so it's a little tabletop, and you can vacuum seal it, and it gives you like a 10-day shelf life on your food.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'm definitely going to need one of those. And it's so funny, that was literally the first thing that I purchased.
That's awesome. So I mean, it kind of came together.
Yeah, it came together very quickly, and we would have friends over for, you know, Sunday supper, because I would spend, you know, Saturday at the markets, and then Sunday I would prep all of our food and cook, and then I would have a couple friends come over for dinner on Sunday night. And then we had one friend in particular one day that asked me, like, hey, if I give you some extra money for food, will you put it into Tupperware containers and I can take it with me for the week? And I was like, well, sure, I'm already doing that for Carter and I, so I'll do it for you too. And I knew kind of in the back of my head that this was going to be my trial to see, you know, could I cook for 3 people and 4 people and 5 people? And so we had 3 friends that I ended up doing that for out of the house, and they just bought the food and I cooked it and put it in Tupperware. And then word started to spread around our gym that I was doing that, and I was getting requests like every single time I was in the gym. And so that turned into me renting some space at a commissary kitchen so that I could be legit and actually get paid for what I was doing.
Yep.
And so I rented, you know, I think I started out with 5 hours at a commissary kitchen, and I started out with 10 customers. They could not choose what they were going to get. They were going to get what I was making.
And Amber's making this, and you will eat it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think everybody got 10 meals. And I met them at Ultimate CrossFit, which was where we were coaches mm-hmm. at the time. Met them at Ultimate CrossFit with a cooler in the back of my Mini Cooper. And I would only take checks. And so that was the first iteration of it. And from 10 people, we grew really quickly. And I went from 5 hours in the kitchen to I needed 20 hours and so on and so forth. And then I was working in the kitchen full time, and they, bless their hearts, they were very patient because I started to take over a lot of refrigeration space and stuff like that until we could find our own kitchen. But we were about in month 8, and we got our own kitchen space out by the airport.
So how long did you continue to work as a consultant?
We started in November, and I gave my notice in February.
Okay, so 4 or 5 months, give or take.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the first year like? I mean, so you've gotten us through the 8th month generally, right? How did you find the space at the airport? I mean, it seems like it started to snowball pretty fast. I mean,
yeah,
this is your first startup, so it's not like you had, yep. And it's certainly your first kitchen startup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how and where did you know where to turn?
So I had one of the great things about CrossFit is it's a wonderful networking place. So I knew a commercial real estate person and said, hey, you know, this is what I'm looking for. Do you know of anything? Because the commercial real estate market in Charlotte is pretty tough. And at the time, you know, there was a lot of empty space, but nothing that, you know, that it wouldn't cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to build out. And I just didn't have the money at that point to build out a commercial space myself.
Yeah.
So I needed to find something that was like somewhat already a kitchen, specifically that it had a hood in it. And lo and behold, we found out about the space out by the kitchen, and it was 6,000 square feet of space all together. And the front part had been like a diner for the corporate park.
Okay.
And it had been closed down. And they also used to do like prepared meals for the airlines, the private airlines.
Hmm.
And so this company had gone out of business 3 years ago, and they literally left everything in the kitchen. And wow. So we had hoods, we had cooking equipment, we had tables, we had utensils. I mean, and then there was another like 4,500 square feet that was attached to it that was warehouse space. And so we were able to get a significant footprint in that corporate building. And it was funny, and Carter and I laugh about this all the time. When we walk in, we're like busting at the seams right now. And when we first walked into that space, we're like, wow, how are we ever going to fill this?
Yeah. Just wait 6 years, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And 6 years later, we're like, wow, we have a refrigerated room in the back. So
in that first year, did you raise external money, or was it all bootstrapped from the beginning?
It was all bootstrapped. We, you know, put money in it from, you know, my consulting work. We saved a lot of money there. Carter continued to work full time as a boot camp coach. And then he also did some design work, like contract design work. He's actually, his career was in advertising.
Okay.
And then, you know, my dad put some money in, but it wasn't like a real investment. He's like, you just pay me back if you can.
Yeah.
parents are great. They are. And, they're so sweet and supportive. And so, yeah, we just, with the money that we were making from the business, and then just little things here and there, we just, you know, made it work. And we did that we started out as a gym delivery model. So people would place the orders, we would deliver to the gym, and there was a refrigerator at the gym. And we did that for about 2.5 years. And we were up to 47 delivery locations within North and South Carolina.
Was that only CrossFit, or was it CrossFit plus any gym?
So CrossFit, we did a couple of chiropractors' offices, a couple of naturopaths. We had, we delivered to Lululemon and South Park Mall for a little while.
Okay.
But primarily it was CrossFit gyms. We had a couple of other more like private boutique type gyms that we delivered to as well. But CrossFit was really our niche.
Was that word of mouth, or did you go door knocking?
You know, at first it was word of mouth. People would hear that we were delivering. We started at Ultimate CrossFit. And then the next gym we delivered to was CrossFit Vitality. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people would start hearing that we were delivering to gyms. And so we had a couple of gyms contact us, and we set up their gyms as delivery sites. And then we were like, oh, well, we could go out and ask people too. And so we started in different areas. Like, we would drive up to Asheville to get our grass-fed beef because, like I said before, you just didn't have access to it, especially in the quantity that we needed the grass-fed beef. Now we actually can get grass-fed beef through some of our distributors, and then the purveyor that we work through now, who's in southern Georgia, White Oak Pastures, they actually come through Charlotte on their way to Maryland, so they drop our beef off for us, which is quite different. I used to drive to Asheville every week in my Mini Cooper, and I would have a cooler in the back, and they would stuff the cooler with the grass-fed beef. And while I was up there, I thought, you know what, I should also be making money while I'm here instead of just spending it.
Yep.
So I contacted there was one gym in Asheville at the time. We started delivering there, and then two more opened up. And so then we had all three gyms in Asheville. Mm-hmm. And then that, you know, if we're going to go to Asheville, we might as well go to South Carolina.
Why not?
And so then we started delivering down into Charleston, and we actually had some friends that had moved from Charlotte to Greenville and also to Charleston. So we had connections to CrossFit in both of those places. And so we just kind of strategically started opening delivery locations down through Charleston, South Carolina. And then we went out to Raleigh. So we had like this big, you know, what I would consider now a local footprint.
Mm-hmm.
And it was taking a lot of time and effort to deliver to all these places. And so we started really thinking about, you know, to really scale this, do we need to be putting ourselves into a vehicle and driving to all these different delivery locations?
Fair enough. Good question.
Yeah. And so at that point, we're like, all right, what are our other options? I had a friend from the CrossFit gym in Atlanta that I'd gone to.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Why not? Who was one of the sales managers for FedEx. And so I called him and said, hey, I know FedEx delivers perishable items, but what do you think about us shipping fresh food? And he's like, I don't see why that would be any different than the other stuff that we ship that's perishable. And so he put me in touch with their local rep, and we started talking to them about, you know, what that would look like for us. And it seemed to make sense in both scaling and also being able to get our product to our customers quicker, because yeah, they didn't actually have to go into the gym to pick it up at that point. And we were starting to get outside of just the CrossFit market, and which at that point made even more sense for us to be able to deliver it directly to people's homes.
Yeah.
You know, because we did have, you know, the customer that they didn't necessarily want to go into a CrossFit gym to pick up their food every week.
Yeah.
So once we started,
especially if they didn't do CrossFit, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. They're like, "What is this place?
Yeah, these people are crazy."
We did always encourage them to at least try it. But yeah, so that's kind of like how we transitioned from, you know, being the local delivery to delivering to directly to your doorstep. And we felt like it was really important for our customers too, from a convenience standpoint. You know, that's what we're all about, is that you can eat this way, but you have to be prepared. And part of the preparation is either doing it yourself or finding somebody that does it for you. And that's, you know, one of our big value propositions is convenience.
So Amber, real quick, right? You ran through like five of my questions, so I'm going to going to circle back around and see if I can't get one or two of them in.
All righty.
So you're a consultant with Bank of America.
Hmm?
Your husband is in advertising. You both do some CrossFit coaching.
Mm-hmm.
You had zero resources. Well, maybe you did in the CrossFit gym. But, I mean, you had to drive to Asheville to get, you know, grass-fed beef.
Mm-hmm.
You had to find resources for, you know, organic spinach. Or how in the world did you pull that together over the course of the first 12 and 18 months?
I worked a lot. I had a lot of very good supportive friends that would actually volunteer to come help me. Because, you know, when I would have to drive to Asheville, that was, you know, 4 or 5 hours that I wasn't going to be in the kitchen, which was a problem. And so then I would, you know, race back to the kitchen. I would do all my prep. And then I would get everything to a point where somebody that didn't, you know, maybe they didn't really know how to cook, but they could put food into a package. And so we would have volunteers come in. I would run them through the safety and sanitation procedures very quickly. And we had regular volunteers, so they only had to go through that once. Yes, they would come in, they would help me put food into packages, they would help me distribute the food into the bag so that we could go and deliver. And then about 6 months in, we hired our first employee that was a cook, and that was tremendously helpful for me because, you know, like you mentioned before, I did not have any experience in a commercial kitchen prior to starting this company. I knew how I was a good home cook, and people enjoyed eating my cooking, and so I thought, how hard can it be?
Yeah, exactly.
I quickly learned that it is a completely different ballgame, and it is a tough, tough job to cook on a commercial scale. And so that the first year looked like work 24/7.
I bet. So speaking of not experience in, you've recently raised money from investors.
Mm-hmm.
What was that process like for you?
It's been really interesting because I've had to step out of the doing and knowing more about the business and working on the business instead of in the business. And that concept was first brought to my attention about 2 years ago. And I was like, yeah, I'll get to it. But I was still like, my hands were so in the business and I just couldn't get myself out of it because I was so ingrained. And, you know, sometimes that was good and sometimes that was bad. But going through and raising capital, I was forced to step out of the business so that I had a really good handle on financially what we were doing, strategically what we were doing. and where we were going from, you know, doing promotions and doing this big launch nationwide and not just being so focused in the Southeast. So it's been a huge learning experience for me on how to actually work on the business and not in the business.
Gotcha. You mentioned a couple of times you've pivoted from CrossFit to kind of a CrossFit focus to mm-hmm. a kind of a nationwide delivery service, and mm-hmm. you've also got a kids package that's out there. Mm-hmm. What are those? Are those kind of your main? And kids isn't an only focus, but are those your main pivots? And how did you come? How did those pivots come about? Say, mm-hmm. was it just natural, or did somebody ask you a question and that's the reason you did it, or? How have you pivoted the business along the way?
Well, the first pivot, the big one that we did was going from being 100% gym delivery to home delivery. And that was, we knew we wanted to scale the business, and we, looking at the amount of time and money and effort and risk to delivering the food ourselves and, you know, maintaining and owning hundreds of refrigerators that are not on site, that was all very overwhelming, and it just seemed to me that there had to be an easier way to do it. So that was our first big pivot, and it was really scary because we went from this really comfortable market of our CrossFit folk that we knew and we loved them and they loved us, and, you know, things were rocking and rolling, and it was really scary to pull out of those markets but still be involved in them. But we're going to deliver to your house. Yeah. So, you know, that it's scary when you make a big change like that to a business, even in a young business when you're, you know, only 2.5 years in, you're like, I hope that everybody's okay with this. And we continued to grow through that pivot. And then with adding the kids meals, it was something that we actually had a long time ago. When we first started, we would get requests for people to have either smaller portions, or they wanted to have dinner for their little ones, but it wasn't, you know, cute kid packaging. And so the parents that they had been raising their kids to eat this way, they typically were fine with it. But, you know, people that were trying to get their kids to try something new, it wasn't always the most attractive thing because it was like in a bag and it was all squished because we vacuum sealed it. Yeah. So when we moved to our trays, it made it a lot easier for us to plate food. And when my business partner, Melissa Hayes, joined the company back in February, she's a working mom. And she was like, you know, what I really liked that you had at Mod Paleo was the kids' meals. And so, have you ever thought about bringing those back? And so when she joined the company, that was one of the big things that we worked on bringing back is a kids meal, but making it like fun and cool for the kids. And so that's when we came up with the concept of having like a little bento style, think Lunchables, but healthy. So that's where the kids meals came from.
So on the first pivot from CrossFit to kind of a delivery service, did you lose traction with the CrossFit people as that happened? And then I know you picked up non-CrossFit people as a result of it, but did one slip and the other pick up, or has the CrossFit kind of continued on its path a little bit?
You know, we actually were starting to see folks come in and order food from outside of CrossFit, and that was kind of one of the factors in thinking like, okay, if we're really going to scale this and go out and talk about, you know, changing the way people think about food, that's not just, you know, changing the way CrossFitters think about food. They kind of already buy into this clean style of eating. But if we're going to go out into a larger market, we need to make it really accessible for everyone. And so we had already started to pick up some folks outside of the CrossFit market. And then when we did it very slowly. I mean, I think it took us a year and a half to stop all of our delivery locations. So when we were in South Carolina and Tennessee and the outliers outside of Charlotte, we pulled those in. They were the first. And so we said, nothing's changing. We're just going to ship it to your house now. And so we were able to maintain most of those customers. And then in the Charlotte market was the hardest one to stop delivering to because it was our backyard.
Yeah.
And we were like, we promise you're going to like it better. Yeah. And so, you know, in Charlotte, that I think because we waited so long to do it in Charlotte, it probably, it wasn't as smooth as outside, you know, and it took a lot more education of people understanding why we were going to ship food to their house now.
Yeah.
You know, our core customers were super supportive. You know, we have customers still ordering from us today that ordered from me the first week I started.
That's cool.
Which is really cool. And it's a handful of them, and they'll probably win a prize at year 10. but, you know, everybody was really supportive. We were able to stay involved, you know, because Carter and I were CrossFit coaches. We know a lot of the people in the CrossFit. Oh my God, I completely went blank there. The CrossFit community.
That's fine.
Yeah, Carter and I know a lot of folks in the CrossFit community. So we've been able to stay in that community and active there. But it's been really cool to kind of get out of that and get more into, like, you know, endurance athletes and folks that have autoimmune issues and learning more and more of why people are starting to eat this way. And it's not just about a trend. It's starting to become more lifestyle driven, and people just want to know where their food's coming from. They want to know what they're eating is clean and that it's not full of a bunch of chemicals.
Absolutely. So fortunately, I've negotiated two segments with you today. So I've got one more question. We'll kind of wrap up with this question.
Okay.
And then we'll start back up in a little while. But it kind of follows that same path. Where's the Good Kitchen going to be in 2 years? You know, from a, you know, additional pivots, or, you know, what's on the horizon, or is it at this point in time, is it just growth?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. You know, we're very focused on growth right now. That's our priority, is to get the word out as much as possible. We are very focused on just the strategy of letting the United States know that the Good Kitchen exists. and so, you know, in 2 years, I see us at least double, if not triple, where we are now in volume.
So, wow, that'd be fantastic. So,
yeah.
You know, not only would it be fantastic for you, but having been on a clean eating kick now for the last 3 years myself, I know it'd be fantastic for you know, American citizens in general. So I love what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
And really excited about picking up here on our next episode or next segment. But first of all, let me say thanks again for coming now. It's been great to learn, you know, and kind of discuss as how it all got started, how it got moving, you know, some of the hurdles that you had to overcome, et cetera, et cetera. So thanks so much for carving out some time for me, and look forward to continuing our conversation in a few minutes.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
William Bissett is an investment advisor representative with Seacrest Blakey & Associates, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Seacrest Blakey & Associates. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Seacrest Blakey & Associates also does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance. Investments herein described may be speculative and may involve a substantial risk of loss. Interest may be offered only to persons who qualify as accredited investors under the Securities Act and a qualified purchaser as defined in Section 2A, 51A under the Company Act, or an eligible employee of the management company. There generally is no public market for the interest. Prospective investors should particularly note that many factors affect performance, including changes in market conditions and interest rates, and other economic, political, or financial developments. Past performance is not and should not be construed as indicative of future results.